Welcome to In Context, WPKN's live public affairs call-in show. I'm your host, Ken McDermott Rowe. You can hear In Context every Monday from noon to 1 p.m., except the first Monday of the month when our station manager, Steve, reports to listeners. Our website is incontextreport.com, and you can check out our videos on YouTube. With me is my fellow host, Gus Cantavero.
Hey, everybody. Back from my long vacation. Happy to be back.
And guest host, Jeep Ward, who can also be heard on Tuesday mornings from 7 to 9 right here on WPKN.
Hey, hey.
And our military affairs commentator, Marshawn McDermott Rowe, who's been away on an extended assignment, will return next week for our monthly war report.
I'm sure he'll be brimming with information.
And I'd like to notice that on September 10th, we're going to have a special guest, James Lane, who's the director of a new film on the Oklahoma City bombing called...
A Noble Lie. Very excited to get this guest
on. Bombing 1995, for those of you really young may not remember, 17 years ago, killed 168 people, destroyed the Murrow Federal Office Building in Oklahoma City, and a guy named Tim McVeigh was said to be the mastermind. And
you may have heard of him.
And he was given the death sentence. And,
as I like to call him.
Kind of like a precursor to 9/11. A lot of questions were raised about whether the government disclosed the truth about the bombing. Mm-hmm. So Mr. Lane is going to talk about the Oklahoma City bombing.
Well, wasn't the first World Trade bombing was a bomb similar to Oklahoma City? It was
fertilizer
mm-hmm.
Is
in
that,
a truck.
That's right?
Yeah.
And there was also...
That was 1993.
That was 93.
Oklahoma City was 95.
So there's a lot of questions about what actually...
I think the biggest connection between that and all of the more modern... terrorist attacks, we'll call them generously, is that the FBI was directly linked to every single one of these things, either providing bombs, providing money, funding, vehicles, communication methods, and directly infiltrating the organizations. And one of the things that I'm really anxious to talk to James Lane about is Elohim City, the white supremacist city where Tim McVeigh was living for a period of time, which was heavily infiltrated and actually run by the FBI informant. So they knew directly intelligence about Tim McVeigh, his plans, what he was going to do, and how he was going to carry them out, and failed to act on it, just like in 1993 with the World Trade Center bombing, the first one, where their informant was providing the detonators, the cord, and the bomb itself.
So we're going to get into 9/11 as well, because Mr. Lane is going to be actually in New York attending 9/11 conferences. I know that's a subject he's up to speed on, too.
Right.
So that show is going to be on September 10th from noon to 1 on Monday right here on In Context. Now, today's show, we're going to talk about the budget partly. Mitt Romney selected Paul Ryan as his vice presidential candidate, and the fiscal crisis as a result may figure very prominently during the presidential race this year. So in a few minutes, we're going to talk about Ryan's budget, about Obama's budget, and about whether the proposals to reduce the deficit are realistic. Mm-hmm. But in the meantime, let's start by talking about some important news stories that you might not have heard in the corporate media. Gus, do you have some stories in mind?
I do. Recently, you may have heard there's a sort of a firestorm of information out there about the Department of Homeland Security recently purchasing 1.4 billion rounds of ammunition over the past year. And as Natural News, Mike Adams puts it, that is enough ammunition to shoot every American four times. The bullets that they've been purchasing spread out over a couple different organizations in the government, but most primarily the Department of Homeland Security. The Social Security Administration has actually bought 174,000 rounds of ammunition.
If you bump off those people getting those checks,
that
you
is
don't
one
have
way to
pay
take care
out,
of it.
That could be a budget deficit reduction program.
That is the new budget deficit. we're taking the mafia approach to
getting rid of our budget problems. Maybe only 50 cents to a dollar for a bullet. Right?
Now that's the thing; they're buying 40-caliber jacketed hollow points, which are meant for shooting unarmored civilians, basically unarmored combatants. So someone without body armor, all right, and that is meant to cause maximum internal organ damage, whereas a full metal jacket would penetrate armor, or an unarmored person would actually go through them, right?
It's gruesome, but the hollow point collects
breaks. What happens is the hollow point basically it mushrooms, because when it impacts, the hollow point it compresses air and it breaks apart. So it's like a little grenade. It just produces shrapnel in the wound. So, you know, there's no exit. So
it tears up the guy that you shoot, but it won't hit the guy standing behind him.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So it's meant to kill by causing internal bleeding.
So it's not the kind of weapon that a soldier would use.
Right. Departments have switched from 9mm.
It's a good hunting weapon, honestly, because, you know, if you shoot an animal with it, you know, you just got to track it a little bit because the animal's going to drop. And same deal with people.
This bullet is illegal under the Geneva Convention. So you're not supposed to use this in military operations, mainly because it causes so much injury. But why is our government purchasing so much of it?
Just to say again, it's over, you said over 1 billion rounds.
1.4
billion rounds is being purchased by not the Defense Department.
Not the Army, not the Pentagon. Right.
Are we just trying to take them, maybe they're trying to take them out of the marketplace? They're going to melt them down and turn them into something more useful?
Well, I mean, that's a good question, Jeep. Yeah. That's a good question, Jeep, because Fox News reported after this report came out, you know, August 14th, August 17th, says agencies tamp down speculation over hollow point ammo purchases. And they don't focus on the 1.4 billion rounds. Instead, they focus on the 174,000 rounds bought by the Social Security Administration, saying that, well, we need 200 rounds in each member's duty bag, and it takes between 500 and 600 rounds for them to qualify. So this is necessary. But the bullets that the Social Security Administration has bought is 357 SIG, 125 grain, which basically blows a hole in your chest. You can shoot through a wall with a 357.
Yeah.
I really don't understand why the Social Security Administration needs their
for those who don't shoot, 357 is a really powerful round.
Has anybody ever seen the movie Don't Stop or My Mom Will Shoot? Yeah, that's why they need the 357s.
Well, and this is, Gus, this puts in the context of a lot of other stories, like the FEMA camps being constructed,
right,
for which we don't know for sure why, because you can't find out, but why the heck would they need all these prison camps?
I'm going to hold up a piece of paper here. Each one of these Bs represents the 174,000 rounds that the Social Security Administration bought, and that's what the DHS has bought. Each one of these Bs is 174,000, and it basically, for the listeners out there, it's an entire page of Bs.
And when you look at this in the context of, we have for the first time a U.S. Army command in the continental United States. We never had a Army command in the United States, but about 5-10 years ago it was created. And, and some people that are attached to this command, some brigades, are being trained in civilian riot control, right?
Exactly.
So now you put this all together and say, what the heck's going on?
And the DHS is also buying checkpoint vehicles where they can run by and have mobile body scanners, and they can set up, they're called Viper checkpoints on the highway. So they can pull everybody off, and they can check their cars, and, you know, check what they're carrying, and they have mobile stop and go lights so that they can set them up for checkpoints with cameras and flashing lights and so forth. What exactly is the government preparing
for? It's for our safety, man.
Oh, sorry for questioning.
You look at this also.
How dare you?
I'm sorry. I'm unpatriotic.
When the convention in New York City.
I bet you don't even listen to Slayer.
And we had those preventive detentions, right? That Bloomberg rounded up all those people.
Yeah.
What's going on here?
I have a feeling that what it is they're trying to set up these mobile checkpoints to basically shake out as much. Under the auspice of, well, it's for your safety, but basically they're trying to shake out as much of your, you know, John Q. citizen who might have a couple ounces of weed or something like that.
Yeah,
you know,
so
it's like they're going to pick up, you know, everybody who they can pick up and put them away.
The government really is fearful of a breakdown of society like Greece or something like that, I think they want to be prepared for an economic collapse. Yeah, exactly. I think they want to be ready, and they want to have their stuff together. And they've already got the precedent set up. Like we were talking about highway way stations for trucks. There is an assumption of guilt with the truck driver. They have to pull off and be weighed. Yeah. There is no suspicion of anything that they've done wrong, but yet they have to pull over and prove that they're innocent, that they're not overweight, that there's nothing wrong with the truck and so forth. And they've already got this precedent of your papers, please. So why not just set it up for everybody to have to pull over and have their car checked? And yeah, maybe it's for a couple ounces of weed, but I mean,
well, I think that's what they're most likely going to shake out. They're going to shake out people who aren't really doing anything.
That's right.
That bad, you know? The people who are doing something bad, they're going to figure out how to get around that.
And maybe some people say, well, that's okay, because if you weren't doing anything wrong, you'd have nothing to hide. So you should let the police suspend search and
honestly,
seizure
protections, you know? In my life, I have not had a instance where, you know, I've felt anytime I see an officer of the law, like I'm, and it's not that
does
I'm holding anything or anything like that. It's just they're not, I don't feel that they're there to protect me. They're there to, you know, figure out a way to put me.
It's a psychological chilling effect.
Yeah.
Right. You don't feel safe. You feel it's the same as if a mobster was walking by. You're like, oh, don't say anything. Don't look him in the eye. Don't make him mad.
Honestly, yeah. I feel much more comfortable with G's than I do with cops. You know, and it's unfortunate.
It is.
You know,
our government,
like you shouldn't feel like, you know.
Well, when you go to Grand Central,
whenever I drive by a police officer or anything like that, I could be going the speed limit. But it's like,
I mean,
I've also like had a life where, you know, when somebody runs my license, hell, I don't know, something might come up.
That's right. We shouldn't feel that way about our government. A government should fear its people, not the other way around.
Well, that's what Thomas Jefferson said. When a government fears its people, there's liberty. When the people fear its government, there's tyranny. When you go to Grand Central Station and there are SWAT teams with machine guns and body armor.
Yeah. Safe. part of it is you know, the way that I feel about it is a cop or any instrument of the law per se can do whatever they want, because who are you gonna believe? The citizen who's being accused of something, or the instrument of the law?
Sure. Well, was it Iowa or Oklahoma that had that affirmation to say you can shoot an officer if they're violating the law?
Or if they assault you? It was recently.
I think it was Iowa. And then, of course, the national media plays this as this violence against officers. And you know,
well, my mother's side of the family is from the South, and we own land out in, you know, bumbutt Oklahoma, McAllister County. Peace to anybody from McAllister County, Muskogee, Oklahoma. It's a great place, but it's kind of the middle of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
And this is an area where when you're driving through town, it goes from 65 to 25 immediately. Mm-hmm. And that's a total speed trap.
Sure.
But, you know, you get pulled over out on the highway, you roll up your window and you ask for ID, because it's possible, you know, you might go away and never come back.
Yeah. Wow. It's like Mexico. Well, I mean, that's a scary affirmation when we realize that we've gotten to that point. And to the police officers listening who might be listening on the radio right now, I have no ill will towards officers, but I want to refer to you as a peace officer, not as enforcement or as an authority. You're not my authority. You work for the people. You're a peace officer. You're a bonded agent to uphold the law, not write the law as you see
fit. You know, but as above, so below. We've had the top of the government.
What are you, a Freemason?
Yeah, right. Well, it's that part
Illuminati.
That part of it's true, because when the government itself, at the very top, we have the president authorizing murder, saying he has the right to murder people.
Absolutely. Saying unilateral.
He has the right to tap your phone. And they were millions and millions of people have the phone tapped, and they had that retroactive law. It was a felony to say that it was okay.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got illegality going on at the very top. What is the signal to the average policeman then about our rights?
You have no rights.
Yeah. They're
well,
capable
I mean, the government's going to do. Honestly, I don't. Laws and everything, like, I don't, you know, that's why I want to get as far away from, you know, from this capitalistic, you know, police state economy as possible, because whether the law is done or not, it's the government's going to do whatever they want. You know, if they feel like they want to tap your phone, they're going to tap your phone.
I think you're right.
And who's there
most
to say,
people, most people
please don't do that.
Yeah, exactly. Most people feel there really isn't. I mean, we're here in WPKN, you know? Thanks to you listeners, listener-sponsored radio. Thanks
to
your generosity.
Yeah, but if the government really were afraid, you know, they would shut us down, and there's nothing you could do about it.
That's right. Most people feel there is nothing we do. We're trying to do something on this program about it. That's why we're bringing these stories that aren't in the corporate media. And Gus, you talked about how the Greek scenario could lead to the use of a lot of force against people who are upset.
Yeah.
Why don't we move on to our next segment?
Yeah.
We'll make a music break. And we'll come back and talk about the... Oh, well, you have another
Yeah, I got another good one.
Okay.
This is solid gold, man.
And then we'll move on to the talk about
it's even got dancers. It's that solid gold.
All right. So we all are aware of the shooter James Holmes from Aurora, Colorado.
Right.
Right. And how he broke into the dark night showing, midnight showing, and shot a bunch of people. And did a terrible catastrophe there. And we're all well aware of the details there. But I, from the very beginning, the minute that I read this happened, I did not believe what the story was. It's not that I don't believe it happened. Of course, I believe it happened, but I don't believe the story that the media has portrayed, and especially the police chief has said, especially that they said that he worked alone, that he was able to do all this by himself. I don't believe it. Now,
right.
I have the right to question the official narrative, and so I was looking around at that today, and I found this article from the Associated Press, August 7th. And I just want to go through a couple of the discrepancies where they went through the first hour and a half of police audio where they were, you know, the police transcripts and of them looking for a second shooter. There's also been numerous eyewitness testimonies that say that there was a second shooter. First thing that they say, he was arrested in locked in his own car, wearing his gas mask, obviously drugged. This is the officer who responded.
He was
found
in
90 seconds into after the first call. Holmes was already in his car.
And
he was apprehended 90 seconds after the call. And they said he appeared drugged. And the officer asked the other, a suspect in a gas mask, is that the dude in the white car you're by? And then 6 minutes and 49 seconds later, says, that white car in the rear of the lot, is that the suspect? Yes, we've got rifles, gas mask. He's detained right now. I've got an open door going to the theater. And so they found him in his car, and he appeared to be drugged. They didn't have to break the window open to get him out. He immediately told them he was the only shooter. But all the eyewitnesses say that, let's see, one of the eyewitnesses report from Corbin Dates said, looked as if someone in the theater took a phone call by the emergency door and pried it open while looking for someone to come his way. From what we saw, he wasn't alone because the second can of tear gas didn't come from his side. 3 minutes after Holmes was supposedly detained in or by his car, one of the shooters might be wearing a white and blue plaid shirt. Copy. Outstanding shooter possibly wearing a white and blue plaid shirt. And then it goes back and forth where they're out driving around looking for him. Suspect, this 25 minutes later, suspect is going to be male, unknown race, black camo type outfit, believed to be wearing a vest, gas mask, multiple long guns. 31, 45 minutes later, an hour and 16 minutes later, they're still looking, going back and forth. They say, it sounds like it was a coordinated attack. Another one came from inside Theater 9, out the emergency door. There are blood trails on the sidewalk. Possible second shooter. No eyewitnesses to be released, even if they've been spoken to.
What do you mean no eyewitnesses?
No witnesses from the theater are allowed to leave, because even if they've been spoken to, because they're still trying to get...
Can any of them talk to the media?
No, they can't. The judge... Now, this is the crazy part. They found an extra bag, a duffel bag, with an orange duffel bag, a gas can, and ballistic gear found on the opposite side of the parking lot from where his car was parked. But Holmes was wearing a gas mask when they found him. They found the 100-round drum-style magazine that he allegedly used in the shooting, but the gun that they recovered had a regular clip in it. They found, let's see. All right, so all that stuff that goes back and forth with each other, the person who was in Theater 9 who said six people were shot in Theater 9, they said that... So the judge, Arapahoe County Court judge, granted a request to seal the case against Holmes after the prosecutors argued that disclosing the court records would be contrary to public interest.
Oh, okay, this is important. It was the government that wanted to seal it.
Yes, the government wanted
it
sealed.
Okay,
and then
this is a pattern there.
And then peculiarly, the woman who worked in the hospital the next day, her name is Jenny Gallagher. She was a nurse emergency responder at the hospital, was found dead August 7th, drowned in a lake in Iowa. And,
whoa.
Yeah, this is weird.
Did you know that, Jeep?
No.
Yeah, now this was
I have
only...
a feeling this is a conspiracy with the NRA.
Whoa.
They're trying to make it be like, you know, if everybody in that theater were packing.
That's right.
Well, that's I would have shot him. But
well, no,
he'd only shot at least three people.
This poor woman. Hey. I'm laughing because it's so bizarre. This woman, this nurse, Jenny Gallagher. Now, what was her involvement?
Now, she was a nurse at the hospital treating the emergency, the victims, the people who were shot. All right, so the only place that this was reported was in an Irish newspaper because she's Irish.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so they interviewed the husband, and they got multiple quotes wrong. And they said that she was a bad swimmer and yet she was out on a lake in a boat with a friend after the family had gone to bed, but she wasn't reported missing until the next day.
This is too much.
She was found floating under the dock before the emergency workers got there.
What would she have known that would have been?
I don't know, but I mean,
she might have overheard stuff from eyewitnesses or something like that.
Victims might have said, this guy shot me. It was blah, blah, blah. And not the exact.
And then maybe she raised a fuss and said, look, we got to tell the press about this because they're getting it wrong.
Yeah.
She goes on vacation 10 days later and she drowns.
She's dead, yeah. Yeah.
Yes. So, quote, I mean, unquote. Hey, I'm not saying nothing, but
we keep documenting on the show are many instances of violence which are different from what the government reports them to be.
Right. That's all I want to say. I just want to say that there's more to the story. That's it.
Yeah.
And Jeep, if I did have a gun in that theater, I would have shot him.
I'm sure you would have, but I feel like the NRA is trying to push so much of an agenda of, you know, if everybody has a gun, then everybody's safe. And it's nobody is safe if everybody has a gun.
Everybody will try to exploit this.
On the flip side, though, I mean, look, the Department of Homeland Security sends guns down to Mexico to be used in crimes so that they can blame people who have guns in America. Like, how do these things go, conflict with each other? They conflict in every single possible way.
But we've seen so often these terror acts are timed in order to increase public fears and support.
And what is coming up? The United Nations Small Arms Treaty. And that's coming up in a couple of weeks and it's stalling in Senate. So, I mean, they get these kinds of things that go on and they use them for their political game.
And the refrain I heard from the mayor of Aurora was, this could happen to your town. It's like, keep everybody scared. So that's why we have to have armies in Afghanistan.
And who is James?
We need to have air sirens going off all the time and people just running in the streets.
You know, I'm afraid of...
Around the clock.
I am not afraid of the Afghans. I'm afraid of my government. I hate to say it, folks. I am more afraid of my government than I am of
Afghans. I ain't afraid of nobody.
And I mean, that's where the
I don't trust
my,
no one that
my
don't
personal
hate
liberty
pigs.
Comes from. And this, I'm not coming from this as a conservative Republican. I'm like a Kennedy Democrat by heritage. But it's the government stepping on people here.
It's on your birth certificate, actually. I've seen it.
Not foreigners, anyway.
Political affiliation, Kennedy Democrat.
Gives you an idea of my age, too, right?
Yeah. back when they used to do that sort of thing.
Can we move on?
We can.
Why don't we take
a
little music break? And we'll come back and talk about the deficit in Ryan and Obama.
We'll be back in a minute. It's In Context on WPKN 89.5 and WPKN.org. Watawatawan.
Hey, good afternoon. My name is Ken McDermott. You're listening to In Context, WPKN's live call-in show. I'm here with my fellow host, Gus Cantavero, and our guest host, Jeep Ward.
Hey.
Hey. Hello.
And we'll be taking your calls in a few minutes. In this segment, we're going to talk about the deficit, about Paul Ryan, who's been selected as a VP by Mitt Romney, about Obama's attempt to deal with the deficit. And I'd like to start out with some kind of review of the situation.
So you want to give out the email?
And the email is ken@mdrtalk.org. That's ken@mdrtalk.org. And we'll give out the phone number in just a second. But let me just give you an overview so we have some idea about what we're talking about when we talk about the budget crisis. How bad is the situation? Well, there are two numbers you should keep in mind. 3.8, which is trillion, how much we spend, and 2.5, which is how much the U.S. government takes in revenue. Okay, the difference is $1.3 trillion. That is the deficit for the current fiscal year. $1.3 trillion, the huge amount of money.
Cheap at the price, really.
And the cumulative deficit is $15 trillion. And that is equal to what equaled recently our GDP. Okay. So that's like in baseball crossing the Mendoza line, which is when you hit under 200 in baseball, yeah, you don't belong in the major leagues. Yeah. Well, we really don't belong in the major leagues anymore. When your GDP is eclipsed by your national debt, as it was this year, you're really in heading towards a Greek type of financial crisis. Mm-hmm. So is it bad? It's really bad. And the way if we keep going on the way we're going to go, we're going to end up like Greece before too long. So let's look at where does the money come from that pays for the government and where does it go? All right. Most people, a lot of people talk about income tax, and that's a subject of a lot of debate during the election. Actually, income tax is less than half of government revenues.
Yeah.
It's just 47%. Almost as much comes from payroll taxes. That's your Social Security, your unemployment tax, the Medicare tax. The corporate tax is only about 10%, not a big deal. Capital gains averages around 5%, not a big deal. So it's your income tax, and only slightly less important is the payroll tax, is where the money comes from. So where does the money go, that $3.8 trillion? Well, the jugundo items are defense, which is almost $1 trillion. It's like 800, 900 billion. It's hard to count because the CIA and the NSA don't tell us how much money they spend. They've got these black budgets. Yeah. But it's somewhere 900 billion.
It's secretive. It's keeping you safe.
It's keeping you secret. It's trying to keep you safe. Healthcare is the other jugundo item. Medicare and Medicaid combined are about $800 billion. And you throw in food stamps, it's about $900 billion. So they're about equal, defense and healthcare. You really can't talk about addressing budget deficit without looking at those items. The next biggest item I'd mention is the interest on the debt, which is $225 billion this year. So if you add health, defense, and interest on the debt, it just about eats up all of the U.S. government income. It's about all gone. And the interest payment is going to go up. Even in Obama, in his budget deficit, his budget projections, it goes way up because interest rates are now about zero. Yeah. And they can't stay zero for very long. And when they go up and when our debt goes up to $20 trillion, as it may well by the next presidential terms finish, you know, you could easily be talking $600, $700, $800, even $1 trillion a year in debt service. So that's why it's this Greece scenario. It's really not improbable. The other items important like education is about $80 billion. Social Security is huge, but I put it in a separate category, $600 billion a year in the retirement fund, retirement program. I separate it because there is a dedicated revenue stream for that. Mm-hmm. There's a huge trust fund. It can be, despite what the Republicans say, you can make it solvent by raising the retirement age a little bit, maybe cutting back payouts a little bit. There's play. It's not supposed to be exhausted for 30 or 40 years, the trust fund, depending on whose study you look at. So although they try to panic people about it, there's a big crisis in Medicare, but the Social Security Retirement Fund, that's not where the crisis is. Okay, so that's where the money comes from. That's where the money goes. What's Paul Ryan going to do about it? He put out this much publicized Path to Prosperity, and you can find it's about 50 pages of, you know, a lot of it's BS, but he does have some.
First, we need 1.4 billion rounds of ammo.
Yeah, I don't know if that's in his budget.
Plan number two, shoot a lot of people.
The one thing he's not going to cut is defense. Okay, so he leaves that alone.
Of course not.
But he will repeal Obamacare. Now, Obamacare, which we did a show on a few weeks ago.
We've talked about it
extensively. It's a budget buster. Mm-hmm. Obama's got all these rosy predictions about what's going to happen, but Medicare spending will explode under it. You know, you can debate. It's a way of expanding coverage, but it's going to increase spending. So he's going to repeal that. Medicaid and food stamps, another huge item. I think Medicaid's $250 billion. Food stamps are like $70, $80 billion. He's going to block grant it, which means instead of just having a kind of a cost-plus situation where anybody who needs food stamps or Medicaid gets it, he's going to say, okay, this year we're going to spend $200 billion on these programs. We're going to give the money to the states, and they can do what they want with it.
We're going to do a lottery like the Hunger Games.
And next year it'll be $200 billion. And the year after that, it's going to be $200 billion. And you guys are just going to have to figure out how to parcel out the money. So he's going to try to control that. A Medicare, big deal. He wants vouchers. This was Ryan's big idea. Obama's going to kill him during the campaign with it. But the idea is, instead of getting, again, I'm covered, I'm 65, I get the insurance. He's going to give you a chit, and you're going to have to go out and buy it in the market. I said, good luck to you. I don't know if you're like 94 years old and you're chronically ill, what kind of insurance you're going to buy, but that's his proposal. He's backed down a little bit. he says, now you can still stay in Medicare, but we're going to increase the premium. So he'll increase the premium, I assume, enough that you'll want to get the heck out of the program. Mm. Okay, so education.
Well, it's only $500 a month. That's easy.
I mean, can you imagine if you're 90 and you're sickly, what it could cost you? I don't know how that will work. He's going to cut spending on student aid. He says, and we did a show on college cost, the explosion in tuition. He says, and I think correctly, the reason why college cost goes up is because there's more and more money available through grants and especially loans. Mm-hmm. I think that's a good point. But I don't know, cutting the student aid without making the colleges roll back tuition, I don't know where that's going to leave students. Infrastructure, which is falling apart, he'd cut that. It looks like he'll leave Social Security alone. For the moment, they wanted to privatize it.
What did you say about infrastructure?
He's going to cut infrastructure.
Which is already
falling apart. Yeah. Defense, he'll leave alone. Okay.
Thank God.
On the revenue side,
I feel so much safer.
That's where the excitement is for Ryan and the revenue side. He's going to reduce the top rate for the upper income people from 35% to 25%. He's got a little difference with Romney. Romney only bringing it down to 28. Romney's backing off a little bit from Ryan's program, but they both want to cut taxes for the upper income.
Of course.
He wants to reduce.
Because they create jobs.
They create trickle down. He's going to reduce the corporate income tax from 35 to 25 because he says other countries have much lower corporate tax rates. But in fact, big corporations don't pay it anyway.
No, of course
not. That's the lie, though. They want to reduce the tax rate or whatever they say as if they're going to pay it anyway. But then GE pays no tax.
Exactly.
So it's just a fraud.
It's really the big corporations.
That's what I don't understand is all this rigmarole about it when it's, you know, either way you dice it,
it's window
dressing. The upper echelon people are not paying their taxes, and the corporations aren't paying their taxes. So the onus is still on the middle class.
And it's that payroll tax
that
we're talking about, because that's a flat tax, basically. You can't escape the Social Security tax.
No, the corporations that get slammed with these taxes are the ones that are under a couple thousand employees.
Right.
It's your local employer.
The top 10 corporations pay on average 9%. Not 35, they pay about 9%. Now, the independent people looked at Ryan's budget and say, well, how much is it going to really reduce the deficit? And they say it'll take 28 years to reach a balanced budget. Okay, the reason is he's got the revenue cuts for the rich
people. We're going to do it by instituting a swear jar.
They happen tomorrow. Tomorrow, you get the rich people get tax cuts, but the savings are going to be phased in over a number of years. So it actually is really, as a budget reduction thing is not really that impressive. Same with Obama. He's got a budget because he knows we're going broke, so he has to come up with something.
We're broke.
Obama says let's raise taxes because you look at his budget proposal. Next year, tax revenues are going up by over $400 billion. And where is it going to come from? He's going to increase the top bracket from 35 to almost 40% for people over $250,000.
For those that actually pay.
For those that pay. He will increase the cap gains from 15 to 20% for households, upper income households. It's going to be a big tax on dividends. Dividends are a low tax. He's going to raise the tax on dividends for people over 250. And he's going to hit him with the new Medicare surcharge to pay for Obamacare of 3.8%. So basically, people making 100 to 200, according to the independent analysis, will have a very slight increase, but almost all of the increase is going to go for people over 250. And he does have some cuts in defense, but it's more on the tax side than the spending side.
Right.
So when you look at Ryan, it's tax cuts for the rich, social spending cuts, and it's really supply side economics. I think it's like Reagan Redux. We cut taxes for the rich people, and then we keep our fingers crossed that the economy booms. With Obama, it's tax cutting it's raising taxes on the rich. But neither of them. I mean, you look at Obama's, he puts out this budget with a 10-year projection, and you take it out 10 years, the deficit, even under his rosy prediction, is still over $700 billion. Mm. So they're both failures as far as I can see, as far as
you got to cut the money where you spend the most, and that's defense.
Yeah. And honestly, I don't understand why defense has to be. I mean, the people who are paid soldiers, I mean, obviously, they need to continue getting paid. Nobody's going to fight for free. But, you know, I think my feeling is that the most of the money goes into R&D for defense.
Figuring out
new and more interesting ways to blow up and fry our enemies, which is like, I'm sorry. Why do we need to do that? If we're in such a time of little conflict aside from us playing in the desert.
And we're fighting counterinsurgency wars. What do we need? Some of these really expensive defense programs are really not.
No. No. Honestly, a war on the ground like what we have going on in the Middle East, you know, high technology is not going to help us.
Well, what's more expensive than an occupation, as we've discussed numerous times before? And we're blowing things up and then rebuilding them, and we're paying expensive contractors to do it. And the money is just being re-diverted in the economy. It's going and the war is just a really complicated way to divert money out of the economy.
That's right.
So we're sending it to these contractors, sending it to the banks who are engaging in the economic development, to these foreign corporations that are just trying to get their pound of flesh and bleed the American economy dry. And so we're using the Pentagon as the way to create the shadow government, which really runs our country. And in the meantime, they're just extracting the money and bleeding it dry as they can try to continue to send the middle class down to the bottom and create that division between the upper class and the lower class.
A lot of people say that defense spending is good for the economy because it creates jobs, but it doesn't seem to be working.
No, everybody seems to base their idea of what war does for the economy on World War II.
Yeah, right.
And it's like, how many other wars have we had since then that were not good for the economy? Vietnam, not good for the economy.
Korea.
Korea, not good for the economy. Gulf War, number one, not good for the economy.
Somalia, take your pick. Bosnia.
You know, Jeep, I think that's, that World War II fixation has really been important in why we make mistakes.
You are the greatest generation.
We see everything through this prism of this war, which was so exceptional.
Yeah, and all of a sudden, and we also look at the prosperity post-World War II, your 50s and whatnot.
Yeah.
And it's like, that is done. Stop it.
That's right. And why were we so prosperous? Because Japan and Germany were utterly destroyed. We had competition.
So here's my new economic plan. It's called the Total Annihilation Platform. Let's just blow up Japan and Germany and be like, what now?
What, China? What are we going to do about China?
Well, let's blow them up, too.
It's like that Randy Newman song.
Damn that Chinese army. They're like a drink dispenser. Just pull one out and another
one
pulls
up. We're going to leave alone Australia, though. We like the kangaroos.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So let's just blow a lot of people up and then hope for the best.
I think we're trying to do it
well,
as fast as possible.
Well, look at all the rounds we got. We're going to blow up our own people. We're going to blow up other people. that's why we have to have the defense budget so high.
I see.
It costs a lot of money to blow these things up.
Where are we going, and what's the best possible outcome from all this defense spending? As Ron Paul said in his budget, I don't want to cut defense 1 cent. What I want to do is I want to pull back the offensive forces that are overseas, and they're just far too expensive for us to maintain. Yeah. Bring them back and have them defend our borders so that we don't have anything to fear.
We had Ron Paul's Bruce Fein.
Bruce Fein, exactly.
A national spokesman on the show.
Brilliant
months ago,
lawyer.
And he went over Ron Paul's budget, and he was the only one to put out a really detailed budget. I mean, this Paul Ryan stuff is long on BS, but it's really short on numbers. And Ron Paul, and one page, it was, this is what we're spending now, and this is what we'll spend if I'm elected. And defense went from like $800 billion down to like...
I mean, look, he's the only one who actually wanted to abolish federal agencies, Department of Education and so forth, because they do nothing but get in the way of the state's ability to implement actual reform in education. Mm-hmm. And Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan talk this big game, but even if Romney was elected, a total of basically zero of what he proposes would actually be implemented.
I think that's part of what's sad about our general populace is as much as all these politicians say, oh, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, I don't think anybody actually expects anything to change. It's just a different face.
That's right.
The country keeps going forward doing the same thing that it's always doing. It's just a different guy who's talking to you.
Well, and that's what happens.
I better give out the phone number because we only have 15 minutes left in our show. You're listening to In Context on WPKN 89.5 FM. Name a show, In Context, which is a WPKN's live public affairs call-in show. And we're talking about the Paul Ryan's budget, about Obama's attempts to cut the deficit. And we'd like to hear what you think about it. What are your priorities? How do you feel the government does anything for you? Would you be hurt if the government was cut by a substantial amount of money? Our phone number is 203-336-9756, 203 336-9756, or you can drop us an email to ken@mdrtalk.org. So the more it changes, the more it stays the same, right?
Yeah. As I pointed out, the two major parties funded by the banks and all the major corporations are just two players on the opposing team lateraling the ball back and forth, running to the same end zone.
Yeah, yeah.
So every 4 years or 8 years, you change whatever party is in charge, and you still end up with that march toward tyranny and bankruptcy. You don't end up with more freedom in any way possible.
Yeah. Oh, we got a caller. Let's check in. Oh, a couple of them. All right, let's go. WPKN, you are on the air.
Hey, so I just want to make a couple points and see what you guys think with some facts about the military budget right now. Keep in mind, I'm actually ex-military.
Uh-huh.
I'm all for a military that makes sense.
Uh-huh.
Okay, the last time we had a full division of airborne troops drop was World War II. Since then, no more than a battalion, a couple thousand at most, have dropped.
Mm-hmm.
We have multiple divisions of tanks and armor. Quite frankly, tanks are awful in the city streets, especially in the, playing in the desert, as you said.
Uh-huh.
So we have all of these different devices, all these different units, all these different capabilities, and they were great for the Cold War. And listening to Mitt Romney talk about the number one enemy to him is Russia.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about being stuck back in the 1980s. I can think of a dozen other countries that I'm more concerned about than Russia right now.
How would you reorient defense spending away from things like tanks into what?
I'm sorry, can you repeat that? I'm having trouble hearing you.
How would you reorient defense spending from away from traditional means, tanks, things like that? How would you reorganize spending so that it's more efficient in being able
to
address
submarines?
Current war situations?
Well, let's just put it this way. A team of, if I remember correctly, it was something like 55 SEALs and one dog went in and killed somebody that the rest of the military spent a decade looking for.
Uh-huh.
Special Forces Operations, a half dozen SEALs shot three pirates, I should say, in the back of a lifeboat when the Maersk Alabama was taken by piracy.
Mm-hmm.
Another major issue that nobody wants to talk about. The fact that ships right now have to divert all the way around Africa, and we're not doing anything about that. That's not a priority. The fact that ships carrying gasoline, for example, have to leg it all the way around the southern edge of Africa instead of going and taking the short route to get to the East Coast.
So would you say that it's a priority to withdraw from these foreign affairs and just try to focus on more security issues around the world and here at home?
Here's the problem. Yes and no. Do we want to keep ourselves out of other nations' problems? Yes.
Yes, I would agree with that.
But do we want to just sit on our hands while something happens and then have to deal with an even bigger problem later on?
So you're saying we'd need a lighter force that we can project quickly if the need arose, but not necessarily maintain traditional, large
occupation.
Armies of occupation around the world.
Oh, absolutely not. And, the idea that, for example, Japan no longer wants troops over on Okinawa.
Uh-huh.
Australia is raising their hand saying, hey, we'll have a small military base. We'll take a couple thousand Marines. It'll be great for our economy.
Uh-huh.
They spend money. Okay. And you know what? If we want to have some forces forward deployed, that's a great idea. You always want to have somebody nearby, because at the end of the day, we have allies all across the world.
Mm-hmm.
You look at aircraft carriers, battle fleets, carrier battle groups, another great investment because they're flexible. They can do so many things. A carrier battle group can carry not just aircraft, they carry Tomahawk cruise missiles, they carry SEAL
mm-hmm.
teams, they carry the helicopters and the delivery systems, they carry, medical mission.
Well, thank you. We have to interrupt to leave it there. We thank you very much for the call.
Thanks
please
very
listen
much.
In next week when we have our military update with Marshawn.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it, guys.
Yeah, thanks for calling in. We appreciate it.
You too. Bye.
All right, peace. WPKN, you're on the air.
Welcome to In Context.
Hey, thank you. Happy Monday.
Happy Monday.
You too.
Hey, I'd feel a lot more comfortable if President Obama, appointed or chose Russ Feingold as his vice presidential running mate.
You would, you don't feel very confident with Biden as his vice president there?
I don't feel very comfortable with Obama Biden.
No. How do you think that changing the vice president really changes the presidency?
I think I think Romney changed the president, you know, the presidential Republican presidential ticket enormously by choosing Paul Ryan.
It's true. I think, though, I see this as just perception, though. I really don't think Romney cares at all what Ryan says once he becomes president. I think this is purely just to solidify the Republican base, to bring those hardcore conservatives on board who were reticent to commit to Romney, seeing that he just wasn't conservative. But once he actually, if he gets elected, which I don't think he will, if he does get elected, I don't see him. I think he's just going to stay true to who he is, which is a wish-wash, spineless jerk.
He speaks very highly of you guys.
Yeah, I'm sure he does.
I could say the same about Obama.
Sure. Yeah.
That's between the two, between Obama and Romney. Do you feel strongly in favor of one or the other, and why?
Obama, 10 years ago, was like an advocate of single payer.
Yeah. Off the table.
Yeah. And, he was like it sounded like, he had a 95% like environmental rating from the League of Conservation Voters during the campaign in 2008. And, I've heard him talk a whole lot about like offshore oil, clean coal. Well, he talked about clean coal then too. I'm not sure why he got like a 95% rating, but there might not have been a vote on that.
Yeah, and he's best friends with Monsanto, who just spends all their time running around throwing pesticides in everybody's green fields, polluting the environment with genetically modified
and then suing them, too.
And then suing them. Yeah, so, I mean, there's a complete contradiction.
How dare you grow regular vegetables?
It sounds like you're not really happy with Obama, but is Romney an alternative as far as you're concerned?
Well, Romney is Obama. I mean, like, Romney...
Ah, good. Thank you.
He basically said, I spoke with, he ran that like sort of fraudulent Olympic campaign back in whenever.
Oh yeah.
Salt Lake City. And the mayor of Salt Lake City at the time, was a progressive and, met with Romney all the time. And, he said to me personally in 2006, Romney's a great guy, he's concerned about climate instability and global warming, da 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 da, and all these noise, blah 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 blah. Like he's on our side, And now, like, what do you hear now?
Yeah, he's for, he's against. He's for, he's against. Yeah, he'll go whichever way the wind blows.
Well, that's
politics.
How you get in,
Yeah.
And then.
Hey, you don't like that? I don't like that either.
Yeah.
Are you worried about the deficit? We were talking earlier about the what's in the budget. Are you worried about that becoming a huge crisis for the country? And do you see either of them doing anything about it?
Yeah, and I actually vary from your previous caller. I mean, I think the military spending in this country is out of control, and no one's really saying, hey, we need to cut this back by 80%.
And even at an 80% cutback, we're still talking a lot of money going into the DOD.
The Department of Defense, the Pentagon, has a $1 billion propaganda budget, which is they use just to write fake blog articles that support their causes. As we talked about, Ken, earlier, they create sock puppet accounts where they go out and they have paid bloggers and commenters to go on YouTube and start fights and... that's what they do. They create that. It's
ridiculous.
They do kabuki theater productions about the DOD and how awesome it is.
What was that caller?
Oh, I don't know. I was like, where was I? I was literally like at, I believe, walking out of a commercial building, and I saw some looks like DOD recruiting. Couple of recruiting guys trying to talk some guys into hey, wow, you got to join the military.
See the world, man. See the desert.
With unemployment
the way it is, it's a pretty good pitch. I'm afraid we're going to have to end it there with the caller because we only have 5 minutes left of the show. And thank you very much for participating.
The senator from Wisconsin, Russ Feingold, really set a different tone for this campaign.
Well, okay. Well, we'll see what happens over the fall.
Again, I'll give a call to Obama.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I'll send him a text.
If you just tuned in, you're listening in Contact 89.5 FM. We only have 5 minutes left in the show. Do we have a caller waiting or no?
No.
So if you want to get one call in before we finish, the number is
203-336-9756.
That's it. And we will be on next week with the War Report. Our military affairs commentator, Marchand, will return from an extended assignment, and we'll be talking about Syria, I'm sure, and other developments in the war.
I just sent a text to Barack Obama. I said, hey, Barry, what do you think of that cat Russ from Wisconsin? And he said, he's aight. So I don't know. We'll see what happens.
I was like, bro, Sadden, you got to pick up Feingold, man. That's how you're going to do it. And he was like, done. I don't know, man.
You know, the vice presidency, I think, would be one of the best jobs ever to get.
Yeah, because you don't do a damn thing.
You don't do anything.
You're chilling.
You get all the perks. They give you a really nice house.
You get a nice house. You kick it with the Senate.
You're
going to be in all the history books.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You're photographing everything, and you have none of the stress.
Look at Dan Quayle. What did that guy do?
Exactly. Couldn't even spell.
That's right.
Yeah.
I mean, it is the best job, unless you are a principled individual who really wants to get something done, and then it's hell because
Obama,
you're completely ignored.
Have me VP. I'm saying.
You put in 4 years, you write a book. What the heck?
It sounds like a perfect job to you.
He handpicked an unknown. Who is this guy? Why is he always on tour? He's never in Washington anymore.
The public will like that. If you're not in Washington, you say, I'm going to clean things up. I'm not in Washington insider.
I'm going to throw huge parties. I'm going to take that propaganda budget and just go on tour for the entire 4 years that they're in the White House. So do it.
It seems I haven't heard anything from Biden until it came time to campaign. I heard nothing from him for 2 years. And then it's time to campaign now, and so he's out there saying inflammatory stuff
again.
Doing
his job. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. He's stirring up the kicking up dust, stirring the pot. Do you smell what the hill's cooking?
I did not think he would keep him.
I thought he was going to dump him in favor of Hillary.
I thought so, too.
Because I thought there was a secret deal. Because I don't know if Hillary, 4 years from now, if Hillary would make it. I think she wants to be president.
She is quite powerful where she is.
Yeah,
I mean,
she
Secretary
is.
Of State's a powerful position.
Course.
She's in the news all the time. And, I mean, she's brokering deals.
But
and,
talk about make you know. Parties making no difference. I mean, Hillary Clinton is just as much of a hawk as any Republican I've ever seen. I mean, she can't wait to start bombing Syria. I mean, it's just they're talking about chemical weapons.
She loves it.
The humanitarian bombing, you know, like we did.
Humanitarian bombing.
Libya, right? Love bombs of Libya, right? I mean, they can't wait to.
We're dropping pillows.
You know, and I think she wants to take on Iran too. So I mean, you couldn't.
Who doesn't?
More.
Let's just blow. Well, let's turn the entire Middle East. Into
but they
glass.
Don't think
That's
about
the
it.
Only
is it right? Russia's standing behind these guys, so. Hillary, you know, it's going to be, could be in for a big surprise.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's why ultimately the world stage is set up between America and Russia. Our military, with respect to our military caller, Russia is a really powerful player because even though they're not aggressively out there provoking us, although I did see an article last week that the Pentagon recently confirmed that a Russian sub was in the Gulf of Mexico for a number of weeks, and we didn't know it. And they confirmed that they didn't realize they were there until they were leaving.
And we've been talking about that in the
War
Report, that Russian subs are based in Venezuela. They can cruise up and down the East Coast, and that the Chinese cruise up and down our West Coast. And that's not in our papers.
I heard they were actually gathering intel on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers' chances at the Super Bowl this year. That's why they were there.
They're heavy betting in
Moscow.
But they don't have to come all the way from where it is, the Baltic.
Of course there's heavy betting in Moscow. You crazy?
That's the economy of Moscow.
And they're trying to weaken our gene pool by sending all these Russian broads over to the strip clubs. You know what I'm saying?
So we have 1 minute left.
So you want to mention our YouTube videos? Where we've got a YouTube. We've turned some of our shows into YouTube videos. The Afghanistan show has done very well.
Yes, I got a number of views on that one, and a number of people fighting in the comments section, which I'm pleased to see. I'm glad that we're contributing to the delinquency of the internet.
Nice.
If you can visit our YouTube channel, youtube.com/incontextreport. Find our blog at incontextreport.com. Make sure you follow it. Like us on Facebook, and you'll get our periodic comments and articles that we share. And the podcast to the shows all get posted there. So we are very active, and be sure to stay up with the show. And,
so we'll have the next week, we're going to have the war report.
Yes.
The week after that, we're off because it's the first Monday. And then after that, we're going to have the James Lane on September 10th.
Yes.
The Oklahoma City bomb. He's the director of a new movie called A Noble Lie.
Right.
About the Oklahoma City bomb.
Yes. And he actually has a new film he's working on right now. Which we may get into if he wants to talk about it, but I don't think we have the liberty to disclose what it is right now, right?
Well, yeah, it's another interesting film.
A very interesting topic, which I would love to ask him about. So I think that's it for this week.
So until next week.
All right, Jeep, thank you very much.
Thanks
for
having us, Jeep.
Yeah, man. It's good to be on with you guys. And without further ado.
I'm Gus Canavero, Ken McDermott-Rowe, Jeep Ward.
I'm Jeep Ward. You can check me out tomorrow morning, 7 to 9 a.m., and my website is halodoesn'tsuck.com. So,
and
thanks.
And stay tuned for Mal Dankner, who's coming up next.
Mal Dankner. Is it Jazz Standards? Jazz Standards today? Because you have two different shows. You have the American Songbook and Jazz Standards. I always get confused.
No, it's Jazz and Standards.
All right, awesome. So stay tuned for Jazz and Standards. But first, these important announcements.